One of them wanted to be the security guy. He claimed he was a security guy.
Welcome to a hot version of Security Guy Radio. Thermally hot. Mr. Jarvis, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
All right, now I'm looking at the Facebook page here on securityguyradio.com, and for some reason I can't share it over to my personal page. Well, technology doesn't always work, does it? Just the way it goes.
Yeah.
What's been going on with you? Did you get wet?
Of course I did.
The storm of the century, what happened?
It was wet everywhere.
Did you fall in the washer or something?
No, just going outside. You couldn't help but to get wet.
It was pretty crazy.
Yeah, it was. It was like a monsoon.
Did you see my gazebo post?
No.
All right, so I have two gazebos. Uh-huh. I got the new one that covers the new jacuzzi, and I got the old one that covers a bunch of crap in the backyard that somebody that lives in my house won't put away.
Okay.
And so we're just sitting on the back, and I looked outside and I went, you know, maybe I ought to take down the sails on that thing, you know, kind of take off the canvas and stuff. And I no sooner said that than it took off into the air. This thing weighs 300 pounds. Took off into the air, landed upside down in my neighbor's shed in the other yard.
Wow.
Missed the power lines by like 10 feet, right? So I could have been responsible for the great Burbank blackout of 2017. Fortunately, I wasn't. But now I know how to get the thing off. Well, come on in. We got a special guest here dropping off our Security Guy radio key. All right. Very good. Thanks so much.
Yeah, and we come at 7 tomorrow.
All right, we'll see you tomorrow at 7.
Okay.
All right. Now, Mr. Jarvis, this was the Security Guy Radio Studios key that my first renter just dropped off because we just opened up the studio down the hall yesterday, and that's why they dropped it off.
Hey, congratulations.
All right. So, that gazebo thing's a problem because now I can't get it off the top. It's 300 pounds. Upside down. How am I supposed to get it off the top of a shed? With a broken leg. Oh, man. It cost a freaking fortune. Anyway,
jeez.
Got enough problems. Well, have you ever heard of radar? You have heard of radar,
of course.
Right? Now, have you ever heard of thermal radar?
Of course.
You have? I haven't heard about it before tonight. What are you talking about? You haven't heard of thermal radar?
Well, thermal imaging, I think.
Not the sheets you put on your back. Your back hurts.
Not thermals. Okay.
Right, that kind of thing. We're going to talk about thermal radar, and we're going to talk about it with our friend, Mr. Mike Petty. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Hey, thank you, Doc. I appreciate that.
And Mike's company is Thermal Radar, and it's thermalradar.com. And I'm excited about this, Mike, because I do know about radar, and I've done one or two interviews about radar as applied to security. Because we think about radar as, you know, cops and radar doing speed, and then military applications, right? And now radar is moving towards civilian usage, right? Because cover wide areas with it. But thermal radar is not the same thing. So distinguish that for me.
You know, it's a little bit of a play on the name. We came along a couple, 3-4 years ago with a new technology using a thermal sensor, using a FLIR thermal sensor, and we built it into a rotating camera that basically turns it into a 360-degree thermal camera. But then we added some features to it that would geospatially locate intrusions that we would detect on the thermal plane. And so ostensibly, we do many of the same features of radar by locating and putting a GPS coordinate on an intruder, but we don't have to use any radio signals. We don't. We're a totally passive system.
So are you, I mean, for lack of a better term, are you digitizing a radar process, kind of?
Well,
it functions like radar, but it's not actual radar.
It is. It functions very similar to radar.
Right.
When I talk to somebody that's what I like to refer to as a radar guy, I'll ask them, what does radar really do? I mean, in the end, what does it really do in the wide area intrusion world? And typically these guys will tell me, well, it locates somebody out in space that you don't know is there, and the radar will pick that person up.
Right.
Well, we do the same thing. We just do it a little differently with thermal imaging. And by knowing some very specific pieces to the puzzle, like how high our camera is mounted, the tilt angle of our camera, we can geospatially locate threats that are out along a wide area, but we do that in a totally passive sense.
Now, I've seen the FLIR camera that you've used. That is a freaking amazing camera. That's proprietary. Aren't they one of the only people that make that?
FLIR is the gold standard, really, right, thermal imaging. I mean, every video you see, from a drone strike to police video of a thermal image out there, you're going to see FLIR in the bottom of the screen, because they are the name out there for thermal imaging. And we love their cameras. Unfortunately, you have to buy a whole bunch of them to cover the distance and the scope that one of our cameras covers.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So I saw some images and a little research. And your system is taking a 360-degree panoramic view once every second.
Yes.
That's unbelievable.
It really is. And it's much more complicated than it ever sounds, because what this camera does, there's actually a great picture of it right there. We mount that FLIR sensor inside of this unit. And inside that unit is a rotating assembly. The rotating assembly is simply there to rotate the camera to different fields of view so that the thermal image can be taken. Now, you know, every thermal sensor has a specific field of view. So that could be a 45-degree angle. It could be a 20-degree angle. Different sensors have different fields of view. And so depending on the size of sensor you use, the thermal sensor will have to stop a certain number of times as it rotates around a 360-degree area. So my smaller sensor only has to rotate 6 times, or have 6 stations that it hits, to complete a full circle. Some of the larger lenses we use have a few more stations, so it takes a few more milliseconds for it to catch up and do a full 360 degrees.
Now, do you need some awesome computing power to do this? I mean, are you stitching together, you know, petabytes of data?
You use the right term, Chuck. Stitching is what we do, and stitching is one of the things that makes our thermal radar very special, because in our software, you're able to take all of these images that we're taking, and they're actually still shot images.
Right.
And you're taking all of these different images and stitching them together in a panoramic view that very much resembles virtual reality, so that I can look to my left, I can look to my right in thermal, and be able to see anything out there day or night that might be coming at me. So again, this is an intrusion detection system to find those people and vehicles out there that might be hiding and moving in the dark that you can't see.
So I just bought a little camera for my new studio.
Yes.
Travis, I told you who made that thing. Who makes that thing? Remember? It's a very short little name. Oh, Netgear makes it. Anyway, it's got a thermal camera on it.
Yes.
Right? And my studio is pitch black because I got sound blankets in there. There's not one piece of light in that studio, okay? And I sit at home and I turn it on and I go, look, you can see the thing perfectly clear. It's black and white, right? It's a reverse negative.
It looks black and white. What they're actually doing is oddly enough, in the thermal world, they call it different shades of gray.
Right.
Kind of apropos with some of the modern shows that are out. But on the thermal scale, you have lots of different shades of gray when you're looking at that. So typically you have a black hot or white hot look. So in the pictures you were just showing, where the greater the heat, the wider the image, and the less that, you know, if there's less heat, then the image is darker. So this image here shows several of our images that are all stitched together in that top view that really is showing about 4 or 5 pictures for the 360-degree area that are all stitched together to look like one image. Very similar to what your iPhone or a panoramic camera might do. It's just taking a bunch of shots and, you know, melding them together into one clean shot.
Well, the little camera I have is so amazing, because then when the janitor walks in and it's still kind of dark, Arlo, that's what it's called, Arlo. That's what it's called. You can see their face perfectly clear, right?
Yeah.
It's streaming in 1080p
and
coming up on my phone. So this technology is amazing to me. Now,
it is.
Why do we want thermal? Why is this not being used in the middle of the day?
Well, it is used in the middle of the day, Chuck. There's truly nothing
still
better.
As thermal.
Excuse me?
It's still a thermal image, but in daylight.
Everything gives off thermal energy. So everything in the spectrum, we use what we call a a long wave IR sensor. So there's long wave, there's short wave, there's mid wave in the thermal spectrum. And so we use a LWIR sensor from FLIR, and that is just a different type of radio wave that's coming out. But it's the same radio wave, the same thermal radiation that is coming off of all of the things that are out there. So the grass has a certain temperature that it's coming back as. Cars have a different thermal signature. So all these things have different thermal components, and it comes back kind of as a picture. Even though it looks black and white, it comes back as lots of different grays and whites and blacks that actually resemble the picture that you're seeing.
So if it's the middle of the day, that doesn't interfere with the imagery?
No. Thermal sees that. The same day or night. It's the same image. During the day, there's certain things that heat up a little bit better. And yeah. So sometimes the contrast is a little bit different. So, at nighttime, though, we like, as FLIR says, we own the night. And we certainly are one of those groups that when it's nighttime, there's no one that finds people out in the dark better than you.
Well, I know a couple of women that are pretty good at that, Jarvis. You ever been in trouble for that? They can find you. They can find you anywhere. Yeah, they know how to do that, but that's a different story. All right, tell me about applications. Are we talking, the big, the evil corporation buys it, the government, obviously, that kind of thing? I mean, who's using this kind of stuff?
Well, it really is a commercial and industrial and even police and military type unit. We our sectors of business are going to be primarily in the energy sector. So you've got substations, power plants. Recently, a few years ago, Congress passed the Critical Infrastructure Protection Act, which requires that all substations start to have a plan and a certain protection level depending on the size of the substation. And so some of these substations are out there, and the power grid, as you've talked before in certain podcasts you've done, the power grid is very vulnerable. And so what thermal radar is able to do for the power grid is provide detection 360 degrees out to 500 meters in every direction, telling you that here's a 1 kilometer diameter circle, and if anything enters that circle, we're going to tell you where it's coming from.
Now, these images are stitched together. They're stills, right? It's spinning around like a top, and it's taken thousands of photographs and stitched them together. After the image is stitched together in one panoramic view, are all the individual images then stitched together? Does it play back as, I know it's not video, but does it play back as a video?
It plays back like video. It's almost like, the old time cartoons, where it would be a lot of different still drawings, and if you flip through them very quickly, it becomes a movie. And we kind of do the same thing, where we're dumping all of these still shots into our viewing software, and we're able to really see, with a little bit of latency, basically, it looks like just a little bit of a slow-moving one frame per second, 360-degree view. Yeah.
All right, so how fast is that process? We hear people talk about this at all my trade shows. We do it in real time. And real time isn't really real time. You know what I'm saying?
It's milliseconds. I mean,
it is milliseconds, okay.
By the time you dump all those pictures in, within 1 second, everything is updated very, very quickly. So you would never know that there's really any latency at all.
Now, tell me about the interpretation, right? Because that looks like a human being, but it could be a rabbit for all I know. How do I distinguish?
It is. And that really goes to the analytics. So analytics, and we've talked about on the show before, analytics is going to look at pixels. And specifically in thermal, we're looking at pixels, how big the pixels are, how hot they are. So if we see something out in the distance and we can measure out the pixels, and they have a certain shape and form factor, we call it aspect ratio, that we can look at something and say, you know what, we're 75% sure that's a human being, or we're 95% sure that's a human being, or maybe we're just 50% sure because it's so far away that we're only picking up a little bit. So all of those analytics, specific to our camera, and it's one of the 11 patents we hold, those analytics reside inside the camera itself. So these are edge-based analytics.
And are they geographically proprietary? In other words, I don't know, the average person in Encino is only 5'10", so you get a better idea of what people in Encino look like, right? You see what I'm saying? As opposed to, the basketball players in Russia that are 7 feet tall. You're gathering data locally. your analysis is local to your area on your camera. Do you compare that data then to other cameras from other areas to get, you know, better analytics on what you're looking at?
Well, and really for us, what we're trying to identify is, number one, people. And we identify a person as maybe a meter wide and 2 meters tall, or, you know, something in that realm.
Okay.
So once we see something like that, that has a heat measurement of around 100 degrees, 98.6, you know, in that human being threshold, then we're able to look at that and have enough pixels on target to say, we have a pretty high confidence level that that's a human being.
So really, it is based more on the temperature than the shape of the image.
Some of it is the temperature. I mean, if we see something that is 2,000 degrees and, you know, 2 meters tall, yes, then maybe we're going to...
Yeah, Beelzebub is in your backyard if we see that kind of stuff.
No, exactly. So, so if we see a vehicle, if we see a person, we are running it against certain algorithms that are in our software that are looking for something very specific to identify that that's something you need to be worried about.
Okay, so we have the analytics. Now tell me how we get there. Do you use machine learning to get there? Does the machine, do I have to tell it this is what it's learning, or is it kind of picking up all these images and it has 10,000 images now, and now it has a 99% probability that that is what I'm looking at?
You know, we actually don't have to do any active learning. It's our analytics are always developed. We've actually developed them in-house. There are some great analytics companies out there, but we've developed our analytics in-house primarily because what we're doing is virtually a single frame analytic, if you will. We create a background when the camera starts up. So the camera starts up and it starts looking around, and it creates a certain background of what we consider normal. And once we have a normal area, then anything that's new, that's hot, that comes into that area, we then start to analyze, and we'll flag it as an alert.
So normal could be all the buildings.
Yes,
and
correct.
Nobody's in there, and all of a sudden we have some movement or something like that.
Correct. All the parked cars in the parking lot.
Now,
all of those types of things, if they've been there for a while, you know, once the camera starts, it's going to look at that and build that background, say that's normal. But every once in a while, one of those cars will back out or move, and we will flag that as an exception or an alert.
All right, so since we don't have machine learning,
yes,
how do we keep ahead of the bad guys? Because I'm thinking, a Marvel comic character is going to appear one day. It's going to be Aquaman, and Aquaman can't be read with the thermal, right? Or the bad guys get smart and they come up with clothing or something to defeat this. Is that even possible?
Yeah. And so that's one of the unique things about our analytics is, even if, you know, we did a very interesting show. Our product was featured on a show similar to Shark Tank. It was called American Makers. So on American Makers a couple of years ago, we were their pilot episode, and we competed against some other technologies to find out who they wanted to invest with. And so one of the tests they ran was that they put a thermal blanket over one of the guys and had him running around trying to say, okay, we shouldn't be able to see him because he's under the thermal blanket.
Right.
And correctly noted, all we saw was a dark object that was moving around. But for us, that is change. And so we still flag that as an alert because it's significant change to the background.
Oh, that's fair. Okay, that makes sense. Yeah. Because it is change, right? Change is really the measure, not
correct
shape, size. You know, if you're doing video analytics, I got to get your features on your face right. That's a different analysis.
Yes, and when you set up the thermal radar, you're able to specify certain levels of what my confidence level needs to be, what my analytics settings are. It's kind of a tuning process to make sure that all of my settings are hitting the things I want to hit and in the areas I want to hit them. You know, we have what we call areas of interest or detection zones that you can draw out and say, here's a zone where I need to find people, and here's another zone where I need to only look for vehicles. And so the analytics within our thermal radar can ascertain, okay, we're only looking for vehicles over here, we're only looking for people over here, and it will search and find anything that's moving out there that could be an intrusion that's not, you know, not acceptable.
All right, so people I get,
vehicles
I get for a heat source, right, or signature. And like you did say, everything has some kind of heat source in it. You know, every object has some kind
everything
of temperature, so to speak, right?
Yep.
Are there things that we wouldn't be thinking about now as civilians that you guys are picking up I mean, cars and people, we get it. I mean, are you picking up a drone? Okay.
Drones. You know, one of the biggest and hottest topics in the world that we're in is detecting a drone. I was talking with a close colleague of mine that spent some time at a high level in the military. And one of the things that is happening overseas is bad guys have figured out that they can pack a drone full of some C4,
right,
start flying it into places. And that kind of a thing is really scary, especially when you think of we're having football games, we're having basketball games, we're having all these large gatherings of people here in the United States and in other places. And all of a sudden, there's the threat that a drone could fly into that group. And so thermal radar has the capability to see a drone up in the sky and be able to detect it and then notify people, hey, there is something coming.
And what kind of heat signature is a drone giving off? Just the batteries, or the motor or what?
Yeah, it's going to be the batteries. It's going to be the propellers. All of those have different heat sources.
Right.
And when we compare them to the cold background of the sky, it's different. Does that make sense?
That's true. Yeah, that's right.
If you think of the higher you go in the sky, the colder you get.
Right.
And so now I've got this thing that's hotter than what was there 2 seconds ago. And now I'm going to flag that as an alert. Yeah.
So if we're, I keep thinking in the guard business, but it's not going to be a guard looking at this stuff. It's going to be a military analyst.
Absolutely.
No, well, I guess it could be. You're right.
You know,
it could
guards,
be.
You know, one of the things that has happened recently in the security industry as far as officers on duty is that as costs have gone up because of the Affordable Care Act and some of the costs that continue to go up with relation to employing security personnel, a more electronic solution is being considered by a lot of places. So where before I might have a security officer that walked a patrol route, he walked a big open area looking for intruders or whatnot. Well, now I can put a thermal radar up, search a totally wide area that the officer could never really compete with and do it so much faster than an officer could ever see. Chuck, we search the equivalent of 170 football fields every 2 seconds.
Every 2 seconds?
Every 2 seconds, 170 football fields for a single person.
Now, is there a danger in that being too much data for somebody to get a handle on, right, and analyze? It's a lot of data.
Is it dangerous for the officer to get that much data?
Yeah, I mean, my eyes would roll from the back of my head if I was looking at those images all the time. I know there's probably some bells and whistles that alert you and say, hey, there's something there.
And that's exactly what we do. We generate a very simple alert for that officer to say, there's something out here that you need to look at. And again, one of the things that you mentioned earlier, you put up the graphic before, was a radar window. So within our software, we have a radar window that will allow you to geospatially locate where that intrusion is at. And so as that thermal radar is spinning around and looking, they're in the lower left corner. So we drop a Google Earth image of the property that the unit is located at. And as we see a detection, then we're able to put that on the map and say, here's where your problem is. Here's where the guy's at. And that makes it a lot easier for a security officer to respond.
You have any cities using this? I can see city applications.
Yeah, we are engaged with several large cities, even overseas. We're doing a lot of work with some big cities because, again, there's open areas. I mean, I have an area where close to where I live, and it's just a park. It's just a city park. And I look, and they've got a little pan tilt zoom camera that's located at the city park. And I thought to myself, you know, when it's dark, that PTZ is useless to me.
Right.
I mean, there's if you've got teenagers that are in a car or you've got some kind of an assault going on in this park, and it's a fairly big park, there's the PTZ is not going to do you any good versus a thermal unit that is searching that entire park for something that just changed. And now I know there's something in the park. I can dispatch police to go and check the park and see what's going on there.
Now, let's be clear to our viewers.
Yeah.
This is not used for identification purposes of any activity or crime. It's for alerting, notification. It's an alarm.
Thermal radar is an alarm.
Right.
It's a thermal alarm telling you there is something out there, and here's the GPS coordinate of where it is, and you need to pay attention to it. Now, what we did within the last year, Chuck, is we combined the thermal radar with a pan tilt zoom camera that sits right below the thermal radar. So both units are on the same axis. And when thermal radar generates an alarm, then we are instantly able to direct that pan tilt zoom camera right to the intruder. And the type of pan tilt zoom camera that we use has a laser IR illuminator. So we can see a human being in the dark at 500 meters away.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
So, yeah. So 500 meters in every direction. So I can have a unit covering a kilometer for not only detection, but now surveillance both day and night.
Excellent. Now, give me some success stories, if you can.
We have a customer, obviously can't divulge certain names,
sure.
But this customer is a government contractor. They do a lot of work out in the desert, and they have certain types of properties and facilities that need to have detection. And so they had been using an actual radar type system, and actual radar is expensive. Typical radar is very directional. So you might buy a unit that covers a 45 degree angle or a 90 degree angle. And so they were having to buy three or four or five of these radar systems to cover 360 versus us that came in for the cost of just one of their 90 degree angle
and
areas.
Just so I'm clear on this, with the regular radar, you're not capturing an image.
There's no image, correct. Yeah.
When
correct.
I say image, I mean like a photograph type of thing. You're getting,
correct.
You know, on a map, you're saying, beep, there's something out
correct.
There. Let's go find it. Okay. So
correct.
That's a big difference. That's a huge difference.
It's a big difference. So because now with that image, I can run some algorithms to say, based on what we're seeing, that little blip out there is not a rabbit. It's not a coyote. It's a
right.
person or it's a vehicle. And we know exactly the category it stands in.
Give me an idea on cost, and I'm not talking about quoting prices, but can a medium-sized corporation that has, big oil field over there in Culver City,
yeah.
can they afford this kind of thing, or is this really
oh, yeah. no, it's,
military
it,
government
this,
type,
this type of a solution? You're talking deploying something for under, you can deploy one of our solutions for under $20,000.
Really? Under $20,000?
And you
wow.
can cover huge areas.
Yeah.
And so the most expensive thermal radar we sell is $28,000, and that will cover 1 kilometer in diameter, that kind of a circle.
Well, hold on a second. Hold on. Security Radio's little brain is trying to get my head around this.
Okay.
For 20 grand, I can cover yep. a mile radius.
Almost a mile.
Almost a mile.
A kilometer is yeah. about just under 3/4 of a mile.
Yeah, don't confuse me with that stuff. I'm a USA measure guy. I don't metrics. I never got that part. But I know what you're saying. That's remarkable. And a 360. So if I put this thing up on the top of the roof here at
yep.
the studio in Hollywood, yes. I'm going to be able to see a mile around me, basically a kilometer.
Virtually a mile around.
That's
yeah.
unbelievable.
And that's any vehicle that might be moving towards you. And again, think of I always like to when I talk to people, I like to say think of this at night. So think of this in darkness, where you can't really see what's out there, and to know that I've got some person that's wandering around out there, and they're not supposed to be there. I mean, typically we put these thermal radar units in areas like airports. We put them in prisons. We put them in substations. We put them in gas pump stations. We do petrochemical areas. So these are big areas where really nobody is supposed to be out. And if
right.
somebody walks into an area that's a vulnerable area or an area that could cause trouble, we want to know if they're out there.
Yeah, it's not going to work in a crowded city.
In a crowded city, it's not a good use case.
Right.
For it. It really
right.
is not a good because you've got so much movement. You've got people, you've got vehicles moving around a lot. But when it comes to an area that is kind of a denied area, this is an area where, let's say, the runway area at an airport, or a municipal airport, and hey, there's nobody should be out here. Our thermal radar will do that and do it very effectively. I did a recent quote for an airport. It was a municipal. They were looking at having to deploy about 20 to 25 thermal cameras around the property to cover all of the areas of intrusion. We came in and did it with 2 units.
Man, well, now let me ask you a question. To be fair, does that change my focal plane resolution? In other words, your camera, if I take a panoramic on my phone, mm-hmm. everything's real small, right?
Yes.
But to be fair, if I set up 30 cameras, I might get some really close images of people, depending on where I put the.
It's going to depend on what you're trying to do with that. And again, the point of all of this is it's a detection system.
You got me on that one.
I want you to separate the two between, is this a detection system or a surveillance system?
Yeah, if I can detect the guy, I can go capture him and I don't need a camera.
Or better yet, if you detect the guy, because we are geospatial, I can use the coordinate that we generate and I can tell all of your other cameras on the property where to go.
Mike Petty, Thermal Radar, thermalradar.com. This is fascinating. How long have you guys been around?
The company started four and a half years ago. A couple of guys here in Utah that came up with a great idea. This is the kind of thing that I'm sure FLIR wish they came up with. And some of the bigger companies wish they came up with, because simply stated, it's revolutionizing the way that you do detection.
Right.
And creating something that gives you that kind of an open area and the ability for us to instantaneously detect a threat at a price point that is reasonable, because detection is a costly endeavor. And typically a 360 degree radar system is going to cost you around $100,000.
Right.
And if we're coming in at 28.
That's amazing.
There's your ROI right there.
And are you the only company that has this patent of this technology right now?
We were the first company to patent a rotating thermal sensor like this.
Right.
There is a French company that has tried to do some things similar to us. They can't run analytics within their camera.
Well, they're French.
We hold
they're French.
Running the types of analytics we run. So they have to have a computer attached to their camera.
Yeah.
But the ability for our unit to be out in the open all by itself, no computer attached to it, and still generate alerts and alarms. Think of a rancher that's up in Montana, and he wants to know if somebody's coming to his ranch. Well, all he has to do is put this up on a little pole and solar panels, and he's done. The thermal radar only uses 6 watts of power.
Wow.
So it's a very low power device. And now that rancher is getting alerted on his cell phone, somebody's on my property.
Unbelievable. Mike Petty, thermalradar.com. Thanks for coming on the show, Mike. You're going to be at ISC West this year?
We'll be at ISC West this year in April, yes.
I will stop by and say hi to you, and thanks for being on Security Guy Radio. Been a pleasure.
Chuck, I really appreciate the time. Thank you.
All right, thanks.
Yeah.
So, Mr. Jarvis, let's do a little housekeeping for our fans. So we keep talking about the new studio down the hall, and we're going to have a new address. We're not going to go away from UBM, but we'll have additional shows on the other channel. And so go to livestream.com, one word, livestream.com/Security Guy Radio. Or is it /, Jarvis? I get it wrong. I always get it wrong. Livestream.com/Security Guy Radio. And that'll be our page that we'll be doing our live streaming from our new studio down the hall. And if you guys, if you're in LA or Hollywood and you're doing still photography, or you want to do sound recording or, video, anything like that, it's available. So send me a message and come on down, rent it. Reasonable rates. Mr. Jarvis, thanks for coming in today. Appreciate it, as usual. And we'll see you guys next week on Security Guy Radio. Good night.